Welcome to Get Unstuck and Make Shift Happen with Jennifer Grace on Empower Radio, a show to help you get from where you are to where you truly want to be. Now here's your host of Get Unstuck and Make Shift Happen, Jennifer Grace on Empower Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Get Unstuck and Make Shift Happen. This is your lovely host, Jennifer Grace. And I am very excited about the show today. Before we dive in, just want to make a couple of announcements. I am launching my spring masterclass series. So if you are interested, you can go to jennifergrace.com/freestuff and you can sign up for one or all four of my upcoming free masterclasses. The first one is going to be on May 11th, and it's titled Fearless, 10 Profound Mindfulness Tools to Overcome Anxiety and Stop Obsessive Thinking. Then May 25th, Money Mindset, 6 Simple Steps to Change Your Relationship with Money. Then on June 8th, Rewired, The Secrets of Neuroscience Revealed to Change Your Brain and Your Life. And finally on June 22nd, Manifesting Love, The 5-Step Soul Call System to Naturally Attract Your Life Partner. So again, these are free master classes coming up this spring, and you just go to jennifergrace.com/freestuff. And today is all about the creative process, whether you are a creative business person, a creative writer, if you are wanting to be more creative in your parenting, it doesn't matter. I have invited on the beloved Gabe Berman because all of my radio fans adore him and they're always asking me for more Gabe. So they want more Gabe. I'm giving them more Gabe. And we're going to have this deep look into the creative process. I thought it would be great to bring Gabe back on the show because he has a very interesting creative process that he's going to share with us about his writing. And I'm going to be sharing some of the tools from the Creative Insight Journey, the course that I teach based on the Stanford University master's degree course, all about the 6 stages of the creative process, the hero's journey. So lots of good information, practical tools to get you from great idea to reality. A lot of us get stuck after we have that great idea. So we're going to talk more about that. And for those of you who have no idea who the heck Gabe Berman is, I'll fill you in. Gabe is a native New Yorker who settled in South Florida after graduating from the University of Miami. An epiphany, a passion, and a trail of breadcrumbs led him out of corporate America, thank God, and into the career he was meant for. After 8 years of writing columns for the Miami Herald, his book, Live Like a Fruit Fly, was published by HCI Books and subsequently endorsed by Deepak Chopra. His second book, The Complete BS Free Totally Tested Writing Guide, helps artists find their voice. And he also has a book called Where's God When Our Loved Ones Get Sick, and a brand new book, and I believe it's titled Love Lives Here. I probably got that wrong. Gabe, are you there?
I am right here. You're pretty close. You had the love part down. It's Love Looks Like This. You know, it's not too late for me to call the publisher and change the title.
Love Don't Live Here Anymore that I was channeling in.
Yeah, I think we should just change the title. So from now on, everyone, just take your Sharpies and cross out the...
I love it.
People thank you so much for having me back on.
Already excited that you're on the show. We're already getting some excitement and action here.
Well, let me just say, when you were announcing all of your classes... when you first started speaking, normally when I'm doing an interview or I'm reading someone's class schedule, I'm like, I can teach that before I even wake up with my hands tied behind my back. I'm like, that's so easy. I know that. This time I was like, yeah, I need to take that. And I need to take that. And I should sign up for that one. And I should probably sign up for that one too.
I'd love to have you. I'd love for you to co-host with me one of those webinars.
Well, I think I should first take your classes so I know what I'm talking about before I can wing it.
I love
that. Anyway, thank you so much for having me back on your show. You made me a little bit nervous when you were saying that people looking forward to having me, so I will fake it and do my best.
Got to deliver. Yeah, especially my mom and aunt. They are your number one and number two fans. They like to fight over who's your biggest fan, but they're pretty smitten with you. It's pretty cute.
Well, it's very well known that I do very well with the 75 plus crowd.
This is true. You're a good Jewish boy. They love you. So you're in New York right now, correct?
I am in New York. I'm looking outside of the skylight and it's pouring and it's like 4 degrees outside, but
ooh, it's a little nippy for me.
Maybe I'll be back to South Florida soon. How have you been?
Wonderful. I did get locked out of my house this morning. That was an interesting experience. And I just watched myself get all frustrated and annoyed and tried to open all the doors. And I had given my boyfriend the key and whatever. And he locked the door. And so then I figured out the solution. The key was on the way. And I just sat there. I was like, I'm really going to be pissed off right now. I'm like, seriously, this is so minor. And I had red robins like flying around me. The birds are, it's a beautiful day. And I got like a little disgusted with myself that I got so pissed off, you know, for
and
a
that's
second.
Kind of tied into what happened to me this morning in a very big stretch of a way, but I'll tie it in being the genius that I am. Or BSer that I am. I woke up with this song from the movie Meatballs in my head. Are you ready for the summer? Just because I heard it raining and I'm like, yeah, I am ready for the summer. And that thing was just playing in my head. And then I tried to find, I couldn't find any of my books in case you wanted to ask me questions. I just couldn't find anything. And I still had Meatballs. And then I thought of the scene when Bill Murray is like, it just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. I'm like, you know what? This just doesn't matter. I'll find them or I won't find them. You'll get into your house or you won't get into your house. It'll all just kind of get choreographed when it needs to, kind of like our last interview about non-duality and the universe being control and how much control we have. It just doesn't matter when it comes down to it. It'll just kind of work out. And as I was looking for my books, I found one of my favorite books, which I couldn't find forever, for over a year, by Stephen Harrison. It's called Doing Nothing, Coming to the End of the Spiritual Search. And as a writer, I'm supposed to be talking about my own books, but let me tell you about this one. It just talks about how in the end, there's really nothing you can do. And it just kind of ties into you and just sitting there with realizing that there is nothing you can do until the idea popped into your head of how you're going to solve this problem. Yeah. And I guess that's kind of connected to the creative process too, because sometimes you just have to stop and wait.
Yes. Well, that's interesting because that's stage three of the creative process is to do nothing.
So I guess I can teach your class. Now, here, everybody,
you
to
can.
Tell us how to do nothing is Gabe Berman, and I'll just sit there.
Ta-da, and you'll just stand there. I like that. Well, let's before we go into all the stages of the creative process, I'm curious about what your creative process is for your book writing, and does it change from book to book? Have you had, like, a profoundly different experience with each? Now four, correct?
Yeah, four books.
And all available on Amazon. Plug.
All available on Amazon. There's actually kind of a fifth called The Fifth Force. It's about this superhero part one of the story that just popped into my head one day, and that's a whole complete different creative process because writing fiction was definitely out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's been a different process for each book because each time there's been a different catalyst. The book Where Is God When Our Loved Ones Get Sick is because, as you know, my dad got sick with brain cancer, and then when he passed away, I just couldn't sit there anymore. I just couldn't sit still, and I knew that I needed to write something, and I had no idea what. So way before the whole process started, I started writing this little poem of, like, where you might be able to find God, and I was just writing it and writing it and writing it, and it was just very easy for me. It was just a little one-liner, like, God is in, I don't know, snowflakes and chocolate milk, and God, it was in the bullet that killed Lincoln, because it's just, and you know, if you want to look at it, it's everywhere. So I had that on the side, and then I started to write about this whole book of dealing with my dad, the strongest person I know, getting sick. And then every night when I was watching him suffer, or every all day, I was like, where is God in all of this? And the creative process was just like, okay, now I wrote this whole book about what it's like, and I really feel like something is missing. So I just went back and I wrote that whole 30-page poem I wrote, Where God Is. And I'm like, wow, this is why I wrote this a year ago, because it was for this now. Like, I just have no idea. So I just feel like you have to be so open to where your gut is pushing you when you're doing things. And sometimes you write things just to write them. I was looking at an old blog post of mine yesterday about why I write sometimes. I just wrote about it. And sometimes it's just okay to add beauty to the world. Like, if it's not going to pay your bills and it's not going to set the world on fire or not going to get you on Oprah, but so there, I just feel like there's someone should be pointing you to, like, wow, look how gorgeous that is. Go check that out. Even if you're not writing anything beautiful, I just feel like sometimes I'm the guy to point somebody else to something beautiful. Like, just check this out. Like, there is so much going on in the world. Yes, there's so much awfulness, but there's so much beauty, and that's why I feel like I just need to write some time just to point it out. Not that the world is hinging on it, it's just that I know that sometimes I just need to. Like, I'm not one of those writers who, oh, write every day, make sure, sharpen your skills. And I probably should, because I'd be a better writer, but there are times where I feel so compelled to sit down and write something, even more so than a gun to my head. It's like completely imperative.
Interesting. And then the actual, so the idea comes, the writing starts, you know, do you have specific hours that you write,
no,
like author
never.
Hours, or you just, when the mood hits you, are there certain areas that you like to write, whether at your home, the beach, Starbucks, like what goes on?
A lot of the process comes from, let's just say I'm driving, and then I'm like, wow, I just, that's a great idea. I shouldn't forget that. And then I get one block away. I'm like, wow, I feel it slipping away. And excuse me, I literally pull over all the time and I start writing into my phone little notes. And then when it's time to really write, there's no specific time and there's no specific place. It just kind of happens. Sometimes it's 2 o'clock in the morning at the kitchen table, I have to get something down. Sometimes it's in a coffee shop. It just happens when it happens. I feel like I'm writing 24 hours a day. I mean, if I'm sleeping, I'm writing. It's not... There's a quote that I actually put in my writing book, but no wife of any writer understands, is that when we're looking out of the window, we're actually writing.
And, oh, God, and that is so awesome.
And it's so
oh,
true.
Oh, my gosh. I was and, so funny. I was at the beach. I have to cut you off. I'm so
sure.
Sorry. I was at the beach with Steph.
Hey, it's your show. Cut me off all day.
And then I
whenever
was
you just press the button, you just want me to
like,
shut up?
Okay?
Just say, Gabe, just
like,
shut
I'm
up.
Writing. I'm writing
I'm
right now. I'm writing in
yeah,
my head.
Make it happen. I'll just sit here and drink coffee.
I get it.
So you were at the beach.
Great. I was at the beach. We've now decided to at least twice a week. We bought this huge tent that's quite comical to watch us put up. And it's really a four-man job. And we've now moved the office to the beach twice a week. I thought that was very innovative of me.
That is very cool of you.
Yeah. Because why not? You know, there's even internet at the
right.
beach that we go to. How cool is that?
It's remarkable. And that's why that's like that quote. It's like, it doesn't seem like we're doing anything sometimes, but sometimes I would get really down on myself, maybe more than sometimes, about, oh, maybe I'm not doing enough and I'm not writing right at this second. And I'm just kind of like looking at seagulls or, and about a year or so ago, my friend said to me, kind of out of the blue, she knows me pretty well. She's like, you work harder than anyone else I know, even though you're not working. And she's, not to overly pat myself on the back, but she's right. It's not that I'm constantly thinking and not where I am. I'm constantly open to some idea coming to me and then working on it. And it is a definite, like simultaneously trying to be in the moment of looking at the beach and being there with the people and hearing the seagulls and listening to it. But also there's something brewing in the background just in case there's something that I want to write, like, because you just never know when these ideas come to you. So
yeah.
like Live Like a Fruit Fly, my main book, my first one, I was just walking around the bookstore as I always do, just looking for the perfect self-help book. And I would go through all of them and I'd buy them and read them and read half of them and get disgusted. It's just like, I didn't set out to saying, hey, I'm going to write this great self-help book that Deepak Chopra is going to fall in love. I just like, you know what? I'm going to write the book that I need to read.
Yeah.
And just maybe someone else is thinking the exact same thing. And if, you know, two people get something from it, then I've added something to the world, and it all worked out, and that's the way it did. So it took me a while. And just the creative process on that book, on Live Like a Fruit Fly, I was at some awful job that I hated, and I was being yelled at for doing my job well, but more efficiently than I was supposed to. So right. I'm like, this is ridiculous. I just have to like live like a fruit fly, because fruit flies die so quickly, and I just have to be passionate about what I'm doing and get the hell out of here. So I had the idea. I didn't do anything about it, but the process for that book started. I was in a bookstore with my dad, which all of my stories either go back to my dad or a bookstore or the combination of them. And he was just talking to me about writing, and I should like think about more about what I'm doing. But I was already writing for the Miami Herald at that point, and I already thought I was like this big writer.
Right.
And then as we were talking about life and writing magazines, I'm like just trying to blow my dad off. Like, come on, like don't tell me what to do. At that moment, like Live Like a Fruit Fly reemerged in my head like 2 years after the idea popped in my head, like a 2 full years. And in Barnes & Noble, I took a stack of napkins and a pen, and I wrote a third of my book out right there on napkins, like Kurt Vonnegut style.
Wow.
And then I said, This is the first and last time that I was on a mission that all day, no matter what. Like, even if I was out to dinner, like, there was some sort of fruit fly thing going on in the back of my head. Like, this needs to be done. Where my friend, who I talk about in the book, his name is Rob, it was his birthday the day that I started, February 9th. And I called him. And I said, listen, I know it's your birthday, congratulations, whatever, but I have 1 year to finish this book, but if I don't finish it in a year, you have to come to my apartment and kill me. Like, that is my goal. Like, I'm going to finish no matter what. So I wrote on and off and on and off and on and off, and I got disgusted, and I deleted it, and then I said, this sucks, I'm never doing it again, and then I would get back to it, but I was constantly in this fruit fly mode. I stopped thinking about the time or the date or whatever, and then I really got into it, and I was getting close to finishing it, and then I'm like, the end, it's done. Like, it's as perfect as it's ever going to be. And then I looked at the bottom of my screen, you know, in Microsoft, where it tells you the time and the date, and it was February 9th, exactly a year later, with zero planning. I'm like, wow, the universe.
Oh my gosh.
Completely up to something. Yep. So then I called Rob. I'm like, you know, put the gun down. I'm fine. It's done.
Wow. That's amazing.
Thank you.
So, gosh, my creative process feels not as exciting as that. It's very structured.
Well,
you know, I'm like, I have an idea. I then say I'm going to now wake up from 5:30 to 6:30 a.m. And I wake up every morning and I work on that idea. And then I give it to my editor and that's it.
Well, that's why you're Jen Grace, and you got the whole world spinning around you with all these amazing classes and stuff. And I'm just sitting here looking at seagulls talking about books.
Well, you know what's so interesting? I did a game once that I cannot tell you how to play it because it's a secret, and then I'd have to kill you. But it's called the
block. Conversation so far.
It's called the blocks game.
Oh, okay.
So essentially, what it has you do, it keeps pushing you and pushing you and pushing you to pull out your greatest, deepest level of creativity. Like, you keep pulling out creativity, and there's like kind of judges in the game. And they're like, yeah, no, that sucks. Try it again, try again, try again, try again. And I've always been very lucky that I can like throw something together and it's awesome, right? And so I fall back on that a little bit too much, I think, because I feel like there's this deep well of creativity inside of me, and I don't keep going deeper. And, you know, I'm like, it's good enough. Go put it out there. It's good. Let's go next, because I've got so many things going on, and it is good enough, and it's usually great. But I wonder the vastness of what I could be churning out if I could stare at the beach more and could just watch a seagull. And I haven't created the luxury to do that in my life, because I do love to take on so many different components simultaneously that they're just, you know, I hate to say that there's never enough time in the day, but you know, the reality is that my day is pretty packed up also with yoga and fun and all of that. But, yeah, I'd like to challenge myself on that, to not just do it.
Sorry, now I'm cutting you off on your own show.
That's okay.
That's all right. Thank you for allowing me. I think, though, the difference with that is that your writing and what your work is okay, people, I know you're in a rush and I know you have a lot going on. So here are these 10 things and here are these things that can help you right this second. And your sentences are perfect and they're great. And they definitely get to what exactly what your people need to see. When I do it, my whole thing is, let's see how few words I can use to explode someone's universe.
Yeah.
And that takes it, you know, you have to approach it differently. And
yes,
I'm not looking to say, okay, man, just do this and you'll be cool. And this is like, okay, I know you're in the middle of your day, but if you're about to read this, get ready to not be able to do anything else for the rest of your day or cry, you know, like this is going to wreck you right this second. And I guess that's just the two roles that we're playing in this big cosmic play. And I exist to just say, hey, listen, I have these three sentences for you, which took me 4 hours to write, which is going to level your universe and then wake you up. And yours is like a whole different, like, okay, here's a samurai sword. I'm going to cut through all your nonsense. And this is what you need to do right this second.
Yeah.
So if you and I tag teamed on somebody, forget it. It'd be like Kill Bill.
Yes. All right. Well, then you got to take my master classes.
Okay. And then you have to look at seagulls.
Exactly.
That's my master class.
I'd love to look at more seagulls.
They say very nice things about you sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really interesting.
Because another thing, like what I say in my writing book is that, wow, I just sound like one of those authors that I hate. Well, if you turn to my book on page 7, which I wrote and forced you to buy from my college class that you're paying $20,000 for, that good luck trying to think your way into a great sentence. Like, it's impossible. Like, no matter what anyone thinks, like, I'm a great writer, or no, they're a great writer, or I'm a great, whatever. There is no way to think yourself into a great sentence. And I challenge people, like, go think yourself great. You have to wait for it to come to you. And sometimes, like, I can write a paragraph in 5 minutes and it's stellar. And I would look back on it in a year and I'm like, wow, there's no way I could have ever reproduced this. And then sometimes it'll take me 8 hours to write a good paragraph just because it's just the way it's unfolding.
Yeah.
And you have to wait for it to come, because when you try to force it into something, then it starts looking like everybody else's. And if there's one thing that I try to do is not to write like everybody else. I mean, I'm sure there are definitely a billion better writers than I am. But what I do is I get into your guts and I make it seem like you almost wrote this. Like, wow, like this is where I'm coming from exactly at this moment. And I'm only saying that because that's what everybody says to me.
Yeah, that's the experience I had when I've read all of your books. It's just like, oh my God, this is my life. Like, and at the different times that I've, you know, of course I read your God book right when my dad was diagnosed with cancer. That was no coincidence. You came into my life that year. And then, you know, the Writer's BS book, that was just like, oh my God, the whole thing about the voice, that was so interesting to me. Talk about that a little bit.
I'm not sure what you mean by the voice.
So that you're the writer's voice, that nobody really gives a shit about your voice. There was something.
Yeah. You know what? That's, I knew you were going to bring that up, and that's why I was scrambling to find my writing book, and I couldn't find it. I found that Doing Nothing book, and I was finding everything else. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to find the copy on my iPad that I sent to my editor that I wrote, just in case she asked me about it. I don't remember, which I did, with like 2 minutes before your producer called me, who has the best radio voice in the world. Like, last time he called me, and he's like, hey, this is, I'm like, oh my God, there's no way I'm going to sound as good as a producer. I should not even do this show. She should just talk to her producer.
Does Remy even have his own show? I think Remy
I don't know.
Show.
He should take Letterman's show and every other show in the universe and just do it himself. He should monopolize radio and TV. He's the new Howard Stern. He's the king of all media. Let's just be honest about it. I'd be honored to touch the hem of his garments.
Sad.
So, were we talking about something just now before we talked about Remy? Yes, we were talking about
really
the writing book. So when
I don't know if I'm supposed to swear on this show.
Oh, don't worry, Remy will take care of it. He's good.
Handle it.
I didn't hear you say anything bad. I was too busy talking over you. So, what happened with the writing book is I wanted to let people know that, hey, I know I'm not a better writer than you, and I know that I am just like you, and I know that there are a billion writers better than us, but I know if you're reading this book, you want to be a writer, and you want to really make yourself stand out. So what's the biggest piece of advice? And I thought about other writing books I read, and I thought about what every English teacher has ever told me, and I think about how I haven't followed any of that advice ever, and I just did my own thing. And what it comes down to is I think I realized that nobody cares about me. Mm-hmm. And if I write from that point of view, then they end up magically caring about you. Because if you just remember, like, there was somebody on the other end of the screen or holding your book or looking at your words on a blog, that they have their own busy lives and they're completely had 30 or 40 or 80 years of their own life that they're the most important thing. So you have to kind of say, listen, I know your time is valuable, so I'm going to cut through everything and tell you exactly what I feel we both would need to hear at this second. And it has nothing to do with me. Like, I only write about myself only so other people can feel what they feel about. And in the writing
that.
Book...
Wait, we got to hold that thought, though.
Sure.
We're going to take a little break, and we'll come back to that.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, is that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called inventnow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. And you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's a helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called inventnow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the inventnow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Now back to Get Unstuck and Make Shift Happen with Jennifer Grace on Empower Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I am here with Gabe Berman, and we are talking about the creative process. Gabe, are you there?
I am here, and I just got to say, you have great commercials on your station.
Yes. Well, they change, so.
I was just thinking right here, I don't have a cat.
Different than the replay commercials.
Oh, too bad. because I was like thinking, I don't have a cat, but I would love a lost cat magnet because that sounds great.
Yeah. Anywho, finish your sentence about...
So, where I... Well, all right, before the cats and the magnets, I was talking about how the biggest piece of advice I give people is, or one of the biggest pieces of advice is that you just have to remember that people, of course, they care about you and they don't want you to get sick and they want to make sure you're happy and you're living a nice life and they care about your family. But I keep repeating in my writing book, like, remember, nobody cares about you. Like, yeah, it's sad that your mom gets sick and what the flowers look like and how you felt when you, like, but that's not important to somebody when they just want to feel what you're feeling. Like, you have to get on board and you have to let the reader know. It's like, I understand that you're taking your time to read my book. Now, let's see how we can connect the writer and the reader through this story. And that's why I feel like you have to cut out all of that stuff that might be so important to you, but that's important to you on the inside. You're having a conversation with a stranger. And you know, when you're talking to someone and like you bump into somebody online at Starbucks and they start talking about, well, the other day I was buying shoes, they're like, who cares? Like,
right.
And I say, unless you're Springsteen, cut out all that stuff. Because if Springsteen was telling me about buying shoes, I would listen to every single word because we already know him and we care about him. But you have to kind of cut through all that stuff and just... It's one of those insulting things when someone says, like, you read a book about, okay, it was 9/11 and you're not going to believe what happened. Two planes crashed. Yeah, we know that. Yeah. Now tell me how your experience was with that. Don't set the scene for me, of course. Like, if I find that as a reader very insulting. So you have to, not like I'm insulted that I'm going to call the publisher and complain about it. It's just like, you know, you know, let's get on the same page. You wrote this book, I'm the reader. Let's just join forces. I've said this to you on my show before. Two biggest compliments I've ever gotten about my writing is, I have no idea who you are, but I feel like you're my best friend. And that whatever you're writing, it doesn't make a difference. Like, I feel like my best friend is talking to me about something that's worthwhile. And they always say, like, you know what, Gabe, I could have written this. Like, right, okay, that is, I've done my job. And the second thing is, I always think about the girl I went to the prom with in high school. She sent me an email when my book came out. We didn't speak since high school. Mm-hmm. And she said, hey, I hope you remember me. I'm lying in my bed next to my husband and my three kids are sleeping in the other room, but I feel like you're next to me, like whispering to me, and we're so connected at this moment. I'm like, I completely have done my job. Like,
wow.
I'm done.
Wow. That's a great story. I love that.
Thank you.
Yeah. I get a lot. People say, oh my God, I'm exactly like you. You're the same. We have the same exact story. I'm like,
which is great, which means you just cut out all the nonsense and you got to exactly, like, we're all kind of just like suffering on some level. So let's just talk about it, you know? And if we're talking about our suffering, let's talk about those highlights too. And we have those moments of greatness. It's like, let's just get, that's where I feel like the creative price is. I can really write all day about nonsense and I can probably write a novel a day and I can write a self-help book a day, but it won't be on that level where someone just is at their job or watching their kids or doing something important and they just read a sentence like, holy, this guy just gets it.
Yeah.
And now he feels what I feel and now I get to feel exactly what he was feeling because I didn't even know that there's like, I get a lot of emails from people like, wow, I haven't thought about that day on Christmas Eve in 1978 for a very long time. So thank you so much. And I didn't even write about Christmas Eve, you know, and I just wrote about, I don't know, going bike riding with my dad when I was four or something. And for some reason that just to be able to create a memory, but I feel like what my writing does is it brushes like sand off of like old memories for people. And wow, this is Pat Gabe on the back day here at the Jen Grace Show. Brought to you by Jen Grace, Remy and Gabe, and the cat magnet.
Well, if people listen to the replay, they won't hear the cat magnet.
Well, then I'll guess I'll have to tell them all about it. Email me at gaberman@gmail.com and I'll tell you all about it.
About the cat magnet promo. So let's share about the creative process. I'm sure you know this intrinsically, but maybe you haven't heard it just broken down in this exact way.
You're going to make me a better writer right now.
Yes. So take some notes.
I will.
So this was very liberating when I first learned this, probably 10 years ago when I was a student in the class that I now teach. And it was the six stages you go through when you are in a creative process. And a lot of people, you know, they think great idea success. Oh, look at Gabe, look at Jen. They wrote a book. They had a great idea and then they went to success. They don't know about the fact that it took you 8 hours to write that sentence, or they don't realize that I got up every morning at 5:30 a.m. to write and my book was first rejected by Hay House. Like, they don't see the behind the scenes. They just see that our books are on the shelves in Barnes and Nobles, right?
I always think about the Beatles with that, when people are like, oh my God, they're the biggest band. They changed the whole world. Like, not no one, but people don't realize that they played before they even played in London. They were playing in Hamburg, Germany, three shows a day with, like, they had no food because they were so broken. Like, they really got their chops in Germany, and that's how they became the Beatles before they took it to the world. Like, people don't see that part where George Harrison was eating like one can of beans a day.
And actually, Decca Recording rejected the Beatles.
Incredible.
In 1969. They were.
See, Decca, look what you missed out on.
After that, yes. So. That's a myth that it's a great idea success. And the true process is that you go through these six stages. And the first idea is a great idea. And you're like, oh my gosh, you have this huge epiphany. I'm going to write a book. I'm going to start this business. Or even I'm going to throw a surprise party for, you know, my kid. It doesn't matter what it is. It's just this thought that you have, just a great idea. And then, surprisingly, 99.999% of the time, after you have said great idea, you will then hit the brick wall of frustration. Okay. Things don't go as planned. And this is when most people give up, like the funding that they were going to use to launch the business falls through. Oh, well, guess I'm not doing that. You know, their alarm goes off at 5:30 a.m. The only time that they have to write, they press snooze and they blow it off, you know. So whatever it is, or they sit down to write and zero thoughts, you know, it's just a blank screen. So that's actually part of the process. And when you know that you're going to hit the brick wall of frustration, when it happens, you can actually just pat yourself on the back and say, all right, I'm in stage two. I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. And then you've got to do two things. Number one, let go of the expectation of how you thought it was all going to work out, because that how has apparently blown up in your face. And number two, keep your faith in your creativity, right? Don't take it and throw in the garbage. You're going to have to figure out how to catapult over the brick wall of frustration. Now, when you're frustrated, you cannot think of creative solution. So here's the part where you have to do nothing. Okay. So that's stage three. It's do nothing. Take your great idea. Do not put it in the garbage, but instead put it on the back burner. Let it incubate. Let it percolate. This is when you go and you stare at seagulls, right? This is the staring at seagull phase of the creative process. You do absolutely nothing. Once you're bored of that, then you get this kind of resurging of, all right, let me figure out how to get over this brick wall of frustration. And you call in one of three strategies. The first could be intellectual. This is the drawing board, back brainstorming. Well, maybe it could be this, or how about we try that? Or maybe we can get the funding here, or perhaps I need to write in the evenings or whatever. Or you can do something physical, you know, go for a run, take a yoga class. This is kind of in the spirit of, have you ever, Gabe, like, been sitting there and you're trying to think of the name of this restaurant and it's just eluding you and you can't remember it? It's like on the tip of your tongue. And then you go for a drive and all of a sudden you're like, oh yeah, it's Cafe Michael's, and you call your friend, right?
What happens to me every time I write is I'm thinking of something and thinking like, this is just not working. I'm like, well, I have to go to the bathroom. And then I'd go pee and then come back. And that whole, like, walking up and getting away, that's when it pops into my head. But I never think, oh, I should get up now. Like, it just kind
right.
of happens. And then, like, oh, there it is again. There's the answer. Amazing.
Yeah. So you have to walk away from it.
Yep. And let me just tell you, when you said about no expectations, absolutely nothing I've ever written has turned out the way that I intended it to.
Right.
Nothing ever. Yeah. And thankfully, it's always better than my original plan. Like, I look back at it now, and if I went by, like, a planned outline, it would have sucked. Like, it just took its own course.
Yep. Exactly. So then the other strategy is spiritual. You know, you can meditate, you can journal, you can wake up and remember your dreams. And I also think allies sometimes can be helpful, especially if you're wanting to toss around ideas or brainstorm or, you know, talk to somebody that's been successful in the area that you're trying to step more powerfully into, and ask people around you who, you know, have been there, done that, just how they made it. So that's the strategy. And that kind of sets you up for stage five, which is illumination. You're like, oh, I got it. And you catapult yourself over the brick wall of frustration and into stage six, which it is verification. Your creative idea is real in the world. So that is the six stages of the creative process. And I think the two biggest takeaways is stage two is frustration. Allow it. It's part of the process. Just let go of the expectation and keep your faith in your creativity. And when you are coming back in and surging after that doing nothing stage, you know, ask for help, you know, if that works for you. A lot of people just try to do everything on their own. And I think collaboration, or at least reaching out to people that you really trust that can help you think out loud, is helpful to catapult over the wall of frustration. And that is the end.
No, I never thought of the steps that way, because I just, my brain doesn't categorize like that, but that's exactly what I do. Like, yeah, word for word, that's what happened. I don't put thought into it. It just, that's exactly what happens. And when you were speaking, I was thinking about when you said about the blank screen and you get intimidated. People think that, like, writers just like turn their computer on and it's just, all right, here, all right, blank screen, and just keep up. Like, I look at that blank screen, I'm like, oh my God, here you are again. And let's see what's going to happen. It's me versus you. And it happens every single time. And it's not like I go into the blank screen like, oh, I've been here before, I'm going to defeat you. It just happens. Like, you just have to keep on looking at that blank screen. And then that first sentence pops into your head, like, ah, I got you, blank screen. And it's kind of like, now you're, I always look at it like, all right, first we were enemies, blank screen and I, but now we're allies. Like, now, okay, you passed your test. You got your first great sentence down. Let's now I'm your buddy. Let's keep on rolling.
Yeah.
And, So yeah, like, people have to realize, like, everyone faces the same thing. Another quote that I use in my writing book, and I'm going to botch it, I'll just paraphrase it, by Richard Bach, who wrote, Jonathan Livingston Seagull, which he said, all professional writers were just novice writers who just kept on going, something like that. And it just, we're all the same. Like, just, you just have to all face the blank screen and make it happen. Even if that's like throwing a party for your friend or creating a new business, like, the blank screen is there for you to overcome it. Like, you have to kick that door down.
Yes, for sure. And you know what's really interesting? The creative process mirrors the hero's journey. Do you know Joseph Campbell's hero's journey? You know, this you can see as a formula in every single happy ending Hollywood film. You know, like Finding Nemo is a perfect example. You know, Nemo's this little innocent fish. He's just sitting there. And then all of a sudden he gets this calling to go out in the great wide world of the ocean. And what happens? He gets captured by a boat, right? So he's frustrated. And then he gets put into the dentist office fish tank, where he's literally incubating, right? And what happens is he's now got to strategize how to get out of the tank. So those little fish become his allies. They figure it out after a few different tries of strategizing. And then they catapult him out of the fish tank. This is stage five, the literal breakthrough. He breaks through the window into the ocean, where he meets up with his dad and they celebrate and they live happily ever after. So you can see this creative process, hero's journey, in every single happy ending Hollywood film. And those are the films, you know, Bagger Vance, Whale Rider, you know, those feel good, you know, like, make you laugh, make you cry. You've gone on this hero's journey. And that's a very similar feeling when you go through this whole process of frustration, and you've got this calling and you've got to do something, and then you need allies, and then you have a breakthrough, and then boom, there's your creative product or whatever it is.
And the writers of these stories, like Finding Nemo, they understand that without all of that drama and trauma in between, the happy ending won't even mean anything.
Yes.
So you have, and because we all go through that, like, oh, I have a great idea. And then it seems like the entire universe is now conspiring against you to get that idea out there. And you fight through all of that, and it's all part of the process. And then that's why the happy ending is so great, because it's like, wow, look what you overcame. And as you were speaking, I was thinking about, like, there are, like, people who just put a video out on YouTube and then they become, like, overnight signed, like, beautiful, like, musicians with big... And we're, like, if they're great, we get kind of psyched for them. We kind of also root against them at the same time, because they didn't have to really work at it like the Beatles did, or like you and I have to. And I was thinking about, like, who do I know that comes to mind right away? Like, someone like Justin Bieber. Like, he's super talented, but people kind of root against him, too, because he didn't really... And as far as I don't, you know, I'm not his bibliographer, obviously, but I don't know his struggles, but it seemed like he just kind of threw like a video up there and got famous, which is awesome. Like, he deserves to be famous. He's talented, whatever. But people like that. People need it, because that's what I was talking about before. Like, people need to know, the reader or the watcher needs to know that, you know, that there's a struggle there. I was watching, did you see the movie Brooklyn?
Oh,
what a gorgeous movie.
I read your blog post about that.
I was watching it with my mom, and it was just this beautiful love story. And I was, like, sitting there. It was, like, dark, so I was, like, sobbing by the way this guy was looking at her. Like, wow, the writer understands what it's like to be in love. Like, this guy is just so in love. And it was, he just trying so hard to just kind of, like, turn, just get her to, like, see eye to eye. And, like, wow, this, they get it. And it was so beautiful. And she finally says, I love you back. And right at, like, a little bit after that, I said to my mom, like, this is going to go so downhill in about a second, because it's just, it's been too perfect for almost too long.
Yeah.
And then it goes horribly wrong. And then it ends up beautiful, but who cares if it ended up beautiful? It was beautiful the whole time. Like, you need a little bit of that.
Yeah, you do.
To make it real.
Yeah. The triumph, the overcoming. Mm-hmm.
Right. Just even if it's like an inner demon, like, which it usually is anyway, it's all just inside of you. You just need to get over that thing. I think the universe just likes, like, the underdog and a happy ending if you can make it happen.
Yeah. Have you read Liz Gilbert's book, Big Magic?
I have not.
Oh, it's amazing. It's really, it's all about the creative process and creativity. And she has this interesting thing that it was reminding me when you were talking about when you wrote Live Like a Fruit Fly, that, like, you had the idea, but then you kind of, like, let it go for a second. And she had this very specific idea, and she never really, she started the research on it, and then she didn't follow through on it, and she let it go. And, like, 3 years later, a dear friend of hers, who has no access to her notes and didn't know that she was writing this book or anything, literally writes the book that she was writing.
Wow. Like,
yeah. And she has this whole really interesting analogy about creativity, that these ideas are flying around, right? And they land in someone's brain. And they're kind of like, you know, tapping on your shoulder, like, hey, Gabe, it's me. It's How to Live Like a Fruit Fly. Do you want to write me? And
right. And
you're like, yeah, okay, I'll write you. And then if you decide halfway through you're not going to write it, then it says, okay, well, I'm going to go find somebody who can write me. And
that's
it flits
beautiful.
Away and it finds somebody else to express itself through. And it was just so amazing. You know, I mean, how many times have you had that experience where you've had this idea and then all of a sudden there it is?
Like, well, that happened exactly word for word with my new book. What'd you call it? Well, I'll just call it The Real Love Looks Like This. And thankfully, though, it didn't go as far as somebody else did it right before me. For years and years and years, people were saying to me, you really should put out a photo book, because I just always take these beautiful pictures with my iPhone, and I put them on Facebook and Instagram. I was like, oh, my God, you really should put out. I'm like, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Like, I'm not even responding to anybody anymore. Next person asks me, I'm defriending them. Like, this is dumb. I'm not.
Right.
And then one day someone's like, hey, when are you putting your friend? I'm like, what do you mean when? Today. I'm doing it today. Like, my brain just... Something that little tap you on the shoulder said, this is it. Like, you do it now. And I feel like life gets very difficult when you don't listen to that inner feeling. Like, I just knew at that moment to, and then it worked out more extraordinarily than I ever could have imagined, because I had thousands of photos, which I narrowed down to 50. And I was looking at the 50 photos, like, there's still something missing, as perfect as this is. So for years and years, just to make myself, I don't know, just to do something while I'm thinking little poems would pop into my head, and I wrote thousands of them and little sayings, and I whittled all those down to about 60. To me now, I've put out my Catcher in the Rye. Like, this is my perfect book. It has haikus and it has sayings and it has these photos, and this is just what love looks like to me, because I realized when I was writing it, like when I was in the moment of writing the perfect haiku, like perfect for me, or taking the perfect photo, like I just felt like this is like being in love, like that moment where everything is totally magical and you feel nothing else except you and the poem or you and the photo, and this is love. And that's where this book came from. And I just, for literally years, I thought it was the dumbest thing ever. Like, you should put out a poetry book. You should put out a photo book. I'm like, all right, all of you are stupid. I'm not doing either of those. No one's going to care. And then at that one moment, I said, I don't care if anybody cares. I'm just putting out this book. And no one reads it. I really don't even care. This doesn't sell a single. It makes no difference to me. Like, at this moment, I have to put it out. And thankfully, people have been coming back to, like, hey, I'm carrying your book around with me in the grocery store. It's exactly what I need to see at this one second. So I'm just very grateful that the universe just unfolded that way. Because sometimes, as you know, the universe can unfold horribly, and you have to just pay attention in either path.
Right. Yep. This is so true. Which was your favorite book of all the books that you've written?
Like, what really feels more like my baby than anything else?
Mm-hmm.
It's very tough to say. I recently reread the book, Where Is God When Our Loved Ones Get Sick? And I just sat there, and I was going to send it to a friend of mine, but I bought a copy for her, mm-hmm. and I had my old copy. And I was reading it, and I was like crying on every page, because I haven't seen it in so long, and I stained her whole book with tears that I had to send her like my old book.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want her to have my DNA, really. So I don't know, is there DNA in tears? Maybe, who knows? So at that moment, I'm like, okay, this is my favorite thing ever. But when it comes down to it, no matter how much I talk about love looks like this, that it's my Catcher, it's Live Like a Fruit Fly, because that is the one. That is the book saying to you that no matter where you are in life, you can always still follow your passions, even if you don't even succeed. It doesn't matter. Like, you're going to die. And it's called Live Like a Fruit Fly, the secret you already know. And the secret is you're going to die. And we already know that. So even if you're not successful, even if your family doesn't talk to you ever again, even if, like, the worst things happen for you following your passions, you're going to die. And you're not going to be thinking, like, wow, look how much real estate I owned at the end of the day. It's going to be like, wow, I followed my gut. And I put myself out there, and I did what I loved. And that's the only thing that's really going to count at the end, and who you loved. And that's what the book's about.
It's my favorite book.
Well, I'm glad that we're seeing eye to eye.
I put it on my student reading list. Do you know that?
I don't, and that's very lovely of you. So it's called Live Like a Fruit Fly. You can get it anywhere.
Amazon.
Get on Amazon. You can get it. Barnes, you can get it, iBooks, wherever. That book was, and you know, that's just another example about how you sometimes have to kick down doors, because I wrote for the Miami Herald for 8 years, and then I wrote Live Like a Fruit Fly, and I thought that, oh, everyone's going to want to publish me. Like, nobody wants to publish me. Like, I literally got rejected for 2 years from every agent, every publisher, every everything. And at some point I said, you know what, screw this. This is too important just to me. I know this needs to be in the world just so I know that I did it. Not for like some sort of ego reason, like, this is my quest. Like, I need to get this book out. So I self-published it. And because I self-published it, my friend, and I've said this to you on your show before, a friend of mine was looking at my self-published version of the book on Amazon, and her new friend was kind of like walking by her computer, and she's like, what's Live Like a Fruit Fly? She's explaining it to her. I'm like, yeah, it's a book, don't worry about it. But that girl, the second person, that woman ended up being the acquisitions editor for HCI, who put out Chicken Soup for the Soul. And then I got a phone call that day, said, you have to meet me right this second. So this book that I forced out into the world was the first book in that company's history to get a thumbs up from everybody on the review board. It was the first time ever. So,
I think that's the other thing, when we just sometimes let go, you know, and we're not like, got to get this published, you know, we just do it ourselves. And then all of a sudden it turns around.
It's almost like and this is probably not happening, but the way I kind of look at it sometimes is like the universe is just sitting there like saying, okay, you want this? Let me see how much you want it.
Yeah.
You know, what are you willing to do? And there's, you know, the story, the Passover story about Moses, the Red Sea parting, that whole thing.
Yep.
The Kabbalah story behind that, which is obviously that didn't happen, but the story behind that is that, or maybe it did happen, who knows, that Moses, it's not just he stood there and said, okay, Red Sea, you know, part, because the Egyptians are trying to kill me, I need to get through. He walked through the Red Sea until it was up to his nostrils, and whoever followed him, and with such faith, that's when it opened up. It's like, I know that I'm going to be taken care of, but let's see, the universe is going to make me go until I really can't breathe anymore. And then the Kabbalah story from 5,000 years ago is that that's the second the Red Sea opened, when he had total faith.
Yeah. Yep.
I find myself talking very quickly on your show, which is odd for me. It's just that I feel like I get so super passionate when I'm doing your show. When I'm doing other shows, I'm like, well, you know, non-duality writing. All right. Well.
Right.
And with you, I'm like, okay, listen, everybody, quick, we're running out of time. There's a cat magnet out there. Don't you know?
We have 1 minute left. Did you know that? We
actually
have officially run out of time. So how else they can talk to you, find you? Where are you at? Facebook?
You know, when I've met other writers in the past, and I always feel like they're like, hey, how you doing? Let me sign your book. And like, that's the only, like, I just try to be so available. So if anyone ever wants to talk to me about anything, Gabe Berman at Gmail, find me on Facebook. Instagram is always just Gabe Berman. You can go find my book. And the biggest thing, to you can read any of my stuff to see if I suck or not, is omgabe.com, omgabe.com is my blog, where you can comment and you can contact me and you can read my stuff and say, hey, I can read that. He's no big deal. I can write exactly like that.
Love it. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me on your show today.
You're very welcome. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in today to Get Unstuck and Make Shift Happen. And as you know, as always, this is as real as it's gonna get.